And so at this time, as you know, we have a profile interview. And today we have a profile interview with none other than Mfundi Vundla. And I have to tell you, so yesterday I announced that we're going to have this interview. And I can tell you now, Mfundi, I had about 100 people asking me, when is this interview happening? So, yes, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I want to hear you, so I think we should get you closer to the mic.
Okay.
But welcome to the show, and thank you so much for making the time on a Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things that we don't say enough about you is that lots of people would love to hate you, but you're definitely a pioneer. I mean, this is the truth about you.
Why do you hate a pioneer?
You will discuss why people have a problem with you. But I mean, that I think is not new information to you anyway.
Oh, okay.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
But you are really a pioneer. And do you see yourself as such?
Not really.
Not really.
I see myself as, you know, somebody who was put.
You think it's luck? I mean, I think
no, it's not luck.
Yeah,
it's not luck. No. I planned it. I went to school.
Yeah.
I studied literature. I studied drama. I studied all these things. So there was preparation for this. I'm not really a pioneer as such, but you know, I've played my role in the growth of the South African film and television industry. So I've made a significant contribution. So yeah, maybe in that respect, I'm a pioneer. Particularly when you consider that I came into the TV industry in South Africa in the period of our democracy. So perhaps I'm a pioneer in that respect.
Well, let me help you, because you don't have to sing your own praises. But the thing is, you came in an era where there was television for black people. There was. It was always there for a while. But the difference was that people, for instance, who would conceptualize what it is that we saw about Africans were not Africans. So how you then got to see Africans was through a lens of another. And so the story, yeah, sometimes entertaining, but what you did was bring something that resonated with the people in a different light.
Yeah.
And showed them in also a different light. So suddenly it was possible for an African person to see themselves as somebody who's successful, as somebody who was running a business, a legitimate business. You were not thugs anymore on television and so on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like the African people were victorious in the sense that democracy came into being, and they removed apartheid.
Yeah.
So history is often written by the victors, you see. So so I was writing our story from the perspective of the victors, people who had been denied a voice for centuries. Mm. So in that respect,
Okay, so we can agree on that. I think you're a pioneer. We can agree on that. I also think, actually, you're a pioneer in many things that other people don't discuss. And this is where I think this conversation is going to get interesting. So there was a time, so there was Generations, and everybody celebrated you and what you were doing. Then there was another series called Backstage.
Yeah.
That arrived on the scene. And we were beginning to see something really wonderful happening. So we were starting to see the space allowing for more of this kind of thing, which was a good thing, actually, which was a good thing. And also happening on other platforms other than the public broadcaster, which was a good thing.
Yes.
What we don't hear about, which I want to remind people, is your problems with Backstage and ETV at the time. So here you were. And again, in my view, a pioneer. And you're starting to say to everybody, guys, maybe it's time we started making this industry a little bit more fair. Maybe we can discuss how fair this industry can be for everybody, actors, producers, writers, and so on. Can we discuss this thing? And nobody talks about how that didn't go very well for you.
Well, it didn't go well for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lost Backstage.
That's it.
And I was bumped off as a creator of the series and bumped off.
And somebody else continued.
Yes, and it continued.
Yeah.
But we must discuss this in a bigger sense, in the sense that, for instance, the biggest injustice, mm-hmm. and this is where now our government has failed us. Mm-hmm. You know, the government of South Africa has failed people who create content mm-hmm. from owning content. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that I do not own Generations. The people who created Uzalo do not own Uzalo. Isibaya, all those creators do not own the properties they create, mm-hmm. which is different from societies where this industry is prosperous. Mm-hmm. Like in the UK, where the industry is big, or the US, creators of intellectual property own that intellectual property. You
it
understand?
Makes, it makes perfect sense. It and is it grows.
Yeah, the industry grows as a result. Mm-hmm. So that in this country, one of the main obstacles to the growth of our sector is government policy. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Our government has failed us in that respect and continues to fail us. Mm. You understand? So, and in an era where jobs are a critical issue, because our sector can contribute maybe 1 or maybe even 2%, you know, if handled right. Mm-hmm. You know, but of course, you know, we have people, we have government ministers in charge of these departments who really don't know what they're doing.
So what I find really fascinating is how that is your truth, which I know. And also then on the back of that, somehow people seem to not know that you are an advocate of this kind of truth and use you to get to their other issues. So
No. Yeah, well, that's ignorance and short-sightedness. The crux of the issue is that the creators of intellectual content in television do not own, you know, they are disenfranchised. What they create is daily stolen from them by television networks. You understand? Every television producer in South Africa who creates a TV show just survives on the fees, the production fees. And that's it. They do not own what they create. In the US, in the UK, where the industries are growing, this is not the case. Now, when is our government going to wake up, you know, and grow our sector, you know?
Then,
I mean, it's mind-boggling that this thing is still going on at this day and age.
It is mind-boggling. And the result thereof is that then you have issues of royalties and so on, which come down to the same thing. Then why were you the target?
Ignorance, I think, and maybe petty jealousies. I think ignorance and petty jealousy. You mean target?
You were the target. I mean, people decided to focus on you. Your production staff decided, not production staff, actors.
Because
Generation 16, part of it is that their gripe is with, I mean, part
it
of it.
It was misdirected.
My point exactly.
It was a misdirected.
Are not the target. You're not meant to be the target.
No. I don't pay royalties.
That's my point.
The royalties sit with the broadcaster. But it's the inefficiency of the SABC. And then the direct, you see what happened? They had a gripe against the SABC.
I know that.
And they figured they should target Mfundi and let Mfundi go and fight that war for us. And I refused to be used like that.
So, why was it not possible for them to sit down and, because I get this. I get how you're not responsible for their royalties. I mean, let everybody understand.
This is the broadcaster.
The royalties are not your business. They're not your problem. No, they're the broadcaster's problem.
Yeah, I create shows. That's what I do.
But then the strike was on your doorstep.
Yes.
What was the problem with understanding that this is not your problem?
I have no idea. I have no idea. Maybe petty jealousies and things like that. And Zambonisa Lomfundi Vundla. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's a black thing of, you know, PhD and pull him down syndrome. I have no idea as to why I was this target. But you know what? Mm-hmm. I fought for what I created. You know, I mean, I'm not a chump. I fought back.
I mean, in retrospect, and I know that you have a fighting spirit, but were you saddened by that? Because I mean, that didn't do anybody any good. It didn't do the industry any good. It didn't get them any royalties.
Look. Some of those people who their careers were like really, you know, jumping, you know. Where are they today? Most of them, really. Where are they? I mean, they were on an upward trajectory with a show which was like really doing very well. Where are they today? You know, I mean, it was, the whole thing was stupid. And it's sad. Mm. You know?
Mm. So, I mean, it is, yes, sad. And we are here where we are today. And I think for me, the sad bit is it.
But let's be more optimistic. I mean, we're starting on a new food. The country is great. And it's a new year. We've got a new president. And, you know, let's forget the 16. Let's move on, you know?
No, Mfundi, you know, I'll tell you why I think it was important for us to clear that air first. Because I think in a funny kind of way, a lot of airtime was given to another voice. And I know that you're not shaken by that. But I think it's also important for us to balance the voice out and to be to be fair about how we report the story. Because it is quite important for those who may not know inside info to what's your side of the story. And yeah. I think it's fair for us to give you the space when tempers are not high and there is no strike looming. I think that's fair. Hence, I think it was for me important to start off in this way. But there are a lot of other things that we want to talk about with you. You have dedicated yourself very quietly to giving back. And by means of a scholarship, for instance, with the University of Pretoria. I think you gave them $1 million at some point.
Yeah, yeah. I gave them $1 million rand over 10 years ago.
Yes. And what is interesting for me is you chose to fund students who are, I think, in the sciences?
In
the sciences.
It's actually a genius scholarship.
Yes.
When you consider it. It's in science, technology, and... Mm-hmm. And added literature later on.
Oh, I see. Because that was my next question.
Yeah, yeah.
Why was it specifically to the sciences and not to the to the industry?
I added literature later on. But you know, to date, I've not had any literature student, which is like really surprising. That you see, because the thing is this, that to qualify for the scholarship, you must.
An A student.
You have to have passed your baccalaureate with distinction. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, go to NAFSAS.
011-883-0702. Let's take calls. Mfundi Vundla is my guest today, and we're with him until 9 o'clock. Roger in Randburg. Thanks for very much for calling. Hi, Roger.
Yes, hi. Yeah, you know, that's the thing, you know, a lot of people don't realize that by not paying the originator, the originator of the art or the craft or that particular program, it's what's known as sidewinding. And America is very strict on intellectual property. And if the right person got what they deserve, then we'd be like America, you know, it would actually help that artist so much. Just to give you an idea, I sent in the whole program, the whole idea for Police File, and the SABC used it, you know, they never wrote back to me. They used it for about 10 years, and I worked out that they owe me about 20 million rand. And they've never ever contacted me or done anything. And when I tried to write to them, you know, they sort of like become abusive. So I think more should be done to actually stop sidewinding and pay the originator what they earn, you know?
Yeah, I mean
just to give you an idea, I wrote to Donald Trump, I gave him the master plan for The Apprentice. I mean, this is the sort of thing. People need to pay the originators what they really owe. You know?
Yeah, yeah, Roger. Yeah, yeah. So, Mfundi, you know, I think a lot of people don't know about the very early stages of your career and how is it that you got to do what you do. When you wrote a letter to Helen Suzman asking for assistance to get a passport to leave the country because you were expelled at Fort Hare, and was it only two of you that were given a scholarship to go study in the US after you were expelled?
Two
of the 21 that were expelled.
No, actually the other one was not really part of the 21.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, he just happened to I mean,
things happened.
To be around.
So, I mean, you were at Fort Hare. And it was a difficult time at the time, right? I mean, it was not...
Yeah, I mean, Fort Hare, you know, Fortuna was a tough space to be. I mean, like any academic institution during the era of apartheid, you know. I mean, our professors there were brooder bonders, you know, who were out there on a mission to try and oppress the emerging intellectuals, you know, because we were emerging intellectuals of the oppressed, you know, give us as hard a time as possible, try and steer us towards the Bantustans rather than the democratic South Africa. You know, it was a, you know, the special branch was, they were cooperating with the special branch. I remember being hauled out of a history class, you know, by the special branch and being interrogated in alleys, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, our teachers were part and parcel of the oppressive system. They were brooder bonders. You know, it was a horrible place to be. I have no, you know, good memories about about Fort Hare, except maybe the friendships I made there. You know, but it was just a horrible place. So when I was expelled from there, and some people in the United States got to hear about our situation, I sent a
A telegraph at the time,
Yeah, telegram. Yeah. What they call a telegram.
Yes.
Don't believe you. Go to a post office. You write this long
shorthand.
Shorthand, you know, print it out. And to the Houses of Parliament, it cost me a fortune. I'd never, ever written to a member of Parliament.
You don't write long form. Yeah, that's a trick.
You know, and then I told her that, Helen Suzman, that I'd...
She was a member of Parliament at the time.
Member of Parliament. I'd received this scholarship from the University of Massachusetts that I've, you know, I put in an application for a passport and I fear that, you know, I might miss the scholarship because of the, you know, the Department of Interior taking its own time in issuing me with a passport.
But then she wrote back in about a week.
The telegram arrived at my house addressed to me from
a member of parliament
saying that my passport was in the mail.
Wow.
It was amazing.
It must have been quite something because
yes, indeed.
To get the response, number one, was
you
quite...
You know, I told the story the other day to... I was having lunch with Wendy Luhabe.
Yeah.
And Wendy Luhabe turned to me and says, "You are the second person." You know, he says, "I also asked Helen Suzman for something."
Word.
And then it turns out that, you know, me and Wendy have something in common.
Oh, my.
That, you know, we were helped by this grand... lady, you
who
know,
didn't
who
know you from a bar of soap.
Who fought a lonely war, you know, in that fascist parliament.
Yeah, she did. And I mean, you then obviously then had to scrounge around for the flight ticket, you know.
I do. I didn't have any money, and I went to Bramfontein and the Institute of Race Relations, and there were this group of Jewish ladies there, and I showed them my letter of my admission and everything, and they gave me $200.
You arrive in New York with $200 only.
I arrived in New York City with $200 in my pocket.
And what was that like? What was that like with just that in your pocket?
And then I have to look for a bus.
Yeah.
And then I got into a 3-hour bus ride to Massachusetts from New York. Yeah.
Life in New York, I think, was fulfilling more than anything. I think you were doing what you love to do. You were doing theater work. You were writing. And I think that must have been fulfilling. But when you get a call from one of the biggest writers in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been quite something. When someone as huge, I mean, when I say huge, I think people must understand that I'm talking about somebody who... in the world is ranked one of the top, the top producers and directors this world has seen.
Yes.
David Milch.
Yes.
That says to you, come see me when you're in LA.
Yes. Yes. That was quite something. You know, here it is that, you know, I'm doing my second play.
Yes.
Right? In an off-Broadway house. And then, you know, in the post-play, you know, there's a
hangout spot.
Reception.
Yes.
And this lady comes up to me and says to me, "Do you want to write for TV?"
Mm.
I said, "Yeah, sure, but I don't know anybody there." She says, okay, "I'll put you together with someone." You know,
didn't say who it was.
Yeah. And then the next thing, you know, people back then, you have an answering machine.
Leave a message.
Leave a message because you have got bills and you're trying to, you know, vet your calls and stuff. And so this phone rings and then it says, and then let it ring. And then Fundi Vundla, this is David Milch. I went there.
You want to drop the phone?
I grabbed the phone. I said, I'm here. and he had a big laugh at that and stuff. And then, yeah, and that's how it started, really. And then I moved to California.
You know what I think? I'm only imagining when somebody, as David Milch says to me, when you're in L.A., say hi, you know?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as when I'm in L.A. It's I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to L.A.
Exactly. I'm five hours away from Los Angeles.
You don't have the money for the ticket.
I don't have the money for the ticket. I scrounge the money, and then I fly over there, and I don't know L.A., and I end up in a Best Western hotel.
And you say, I'm here.
And I say, I'm here, and I don't know, I do not have money to go to the lunch, so I ask the Mexican gardener to drive me to this fancy restaurant.
With no money for the lunch.
With no money for the transport to get to the lunch. So I get there to the lunch and everything. And then I get there and David Milch arrives there. And apparently David Milch picked up on the conversation I was having with the receptionist. And he asked me where I stayed and stuff. I told him. So he looked at me and he realized this guy is broke, you know. He does. This guy probably has some good ideas, but he doesn't have any money.
I mean, it must have been humbling, because the thing about artists, and it happens all around the world, where there are these artists who've earned their stripes, right?
Yeah.
Writers and the intellectuals and everything. Never have the money, but they're very clever, smart writers and artists and so on, who always hang around theaters.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, and you always talk badly of those who are making the big bucks in the big cities.
Yeah, look. We used to be there in New York at one time. We used to look down.
The snobbish ones.
On the guys in LA, so they're sold out to Hollywood and stuff like that. But basically, all of us wanted to be there.
But you never say it.
You never say it, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
Oh, no. So when the call came, I'm sure it was quite.
And here it was like, I'm out there now. And the guy says, okay, we walk to his office. Yeah. And then I get to the park. So he says to me, can you drive? I say, yeah, I can drive. He says, okay. He shows me his 7 Series BMW. He says, drive around the lot here. So I drive around the lot and stuff. And he says, okay, good. Go and get your luggage. So I drive on the Hollywood freeway. Never in my life have I driven a 7 Series BMW. This kid from the township. I'm driving this. This luxury car on the Hollywood freeway, you know. I'm going to pick up my luggage from this Best Western, you know. And I say thank you to the Mexican gardener. He sees me in a big beamer now. He is confused. And I put my drive back to the hotel. You know, it was my story with David Milch is amazing.
Oh, yeah. We continue that conversation with Mfundi Vundla. We'll do it until 9 o'clock. So my profile interview is with Mfundi Vundla, who is the creator of many, many actually other soaps. I know a lot of you know him from creating Generations, but he's got quite a lot. Josie H, if you guys remember Josie H, yes, he created that as well. And many others, Benelandes and so on. So I want to know whether you ever wondered to yourself, Mfundi, why, of all the people in the world, David would choose you to mentor and give a break to?
Well, I don't know why, but I mean,
did you ever ask him?
Well, I sat him down one day, yeah. And then I asked him why he was being generous to me, and then he told me a story that when he came to Hollywood. The producer who gave him a break told him that he hopes that, you know, he will also help somebody else, which is a life lesson I learned from him, because when I got a break in South Africa, I've given tons of breaks to a lot of people, and a lot of people who are producers even today, you know, who came through Generations and stuff, and then my philanthropic endeavors, scholarships for African students, and that sort of thing, sports people, I learned all of that, the giving back, really, I learned from Milch, you know,
and You know, you came back, obviously. I mean, he taught you a lot, and you talk about how he contributed to your teaching, really, in many ways. And you came back to South Africa, and you were interested in doing something around a thriller, maybe, or a crime series or something.
Yeah, when
like
I came back, right, I mean, I, you know, through Milch, I got to read all this top cop drama, you know, scripts and things like that. And I used to write thrillers, and I imagined myself having a career as a writer operating in that genre, you know. And then I come to South Africa, and I tell them I want to do a series on the Brixton Murder and Robbery Squad.
Which existed, which really was true.
Yeah, a tough cop, SAPS, a crime-fighting unit, you know.
And
they, they told me it's too expensive. But, you know, we'd like you to do a soap.
You never told them you can't.
I never told them I don't know anything about soaps. You know, I never told them that. I said, yeah, sure, I'll write you a soap.
And bought all the books in the world.
I brought all the how-to books and stuff. But the advantage I had, really, I mean, I was a writer already.
Yes, yes.
So all I had to do was to understand the structure of the soap and how two characters are developed and crafted and so on and so on. And yeah,
I mean, look, the long story is that after a while, you know, you were shortlisted, and they ended up giving you that big I'd call it big, because at the time it was a new thing for them.
Indeed, right? It was. Yeah,
it was a new thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having then what would seem like a really big break, you now have the soap and you're dealing with the broadcaster. I'm sure at some point you realize, okay, so it's not that simple. There are problems with dealing with such a big conglomerate, because the SABC is a beast. It's huge.
Yeah, it is. You know, and then, you know, look, another thing, you know, when you get there, you know, I get there at the time when there were all these guys who were Africans who came through the ranks of apartheid TV and felt threatened by a guy coming in from exile and that sort of thing, you know. And then this, thanks God, the guy who's in charge of TV understands this, and generations is kind of developed without these guys knowing. And then these guys find out about it and they try and kill it, you know. And then again, you know, the sabotage, the sabotage within the bureaucracy.
Yes.
You know, like, for instance, there are a lot of black people inside the SABC who are doing their darndest to sabotage a successful series such as Generations. It's unbelievable, but it's true.
It is mind-boggling.
It happened. Yeah. It happened amongst executives. It happened at board level. You know, I mean, with the success I was having with Generations, Pamela, you know, I had a year-to-year contract. I never had a multi-year contract.
But not only that.
A year-to-year. Can you imagine?
There will be times when you're not paid.
The times when you're not paid and stuff like that. And you know, like, you know, people would, I mean, the only reason that I survived this long at the SABC is because of the popularity of the show. They had no choice. I mean, but I remember Saudi Mutsuneng telling me one day that you have enemies in this board. You know, Saudi Mutsuneng once told me that, you know, and I said, what? You know, but I mean, I suspected that, but you know, I don't know. Sometimes us black people, you know, like, we're backward in that respect. You know, we stab each other in the back. We hate to see somebody successful and that sort of thing.
And the irony, obviously, that here you are battling your battles with the big giant, the SABC, and then others expect you to give them multi-year contracts.
That
is the irony, because you can't give them what you don't have.
No. And I can't give them the money I don't get from the broadcaster. I said, okay, if you want that money, okay, you'll get it, subject to the broadcaster giving me that money, you know.
You know, I think for us, what is important is to understand, and I'm hoping that was the point of us having a conversation with you beyond what people hear only when there's a problem, is that there are real problems. SABC is a major institution which has an opportunity to do a lot, but it doesn't, and it.
I guess SABC suffers from the the general state-owned enterprise.
Yeah.
You know the abuse.
Yeah.
You know the state-owned enterprises are being run by people who look at the enterprises as, you know, ATMs and and that sort of thing. They are
cash cows.
People don't know what they're doing, and you know they are cannibalizing institutions. So the SABC was no exception.
In your view, having dealt with it and understanding what the industry needs, do you think the SABC would do well to sort of sell off some assets?
Well, in my view, I think the SABC can do more with less. You know, it can
cut down on the fat.
It can do more with less. The SABC can be run with half the people there, okay, who are draining and living off the carcass of the SABC. Further, the SABC can sell off SABC 3 and have a bidding war from black consortiums who want to enter the new broadcast space, you know, and some radio stations and allow new entrants to get in there.
So
black people,
so
you know what I'm saying? They could do stuff like that. You know, right now it's a big fat organization, which is not efficient, and it's just sucking the taxpayer.
Is the problem the fact that it's trying to be too many things? In other words, instead of focusing on its mandate of being a public broadcaster to deliver things like education and so on, this idea that they can also do that and be a commercial entity is not working.
No, it's not working. They should spin off that SABC 3. It's a mess,
and other commercial
entities, and hand them over to business people who know how to make money and create jobs. You know, and because basically the SABC is being run by people who have no clue about job creation and stuff like that, So, yeah, spin it off, sell off SABC 3, sell off these other commercial stations to black people who've got business savvy and who want to grow the sector, who want to grow the economy.
Would you say the recipe for your success as Morula Pictures has been the team? Because, you know, there are a lot of people who actually are talented in many respects. But sometimes it's the relationship they have with one another or the people they're surrounding themselves with.
Oh, yeah, this thing. Generations has got a great team, huh?
Well, I mean, I think Morula Pictures is it. I mean, you guys have other entities there, you know, Benelandas and so on. So is it more the team that has made it so successful over the years?
Yeah, I think so. I think my relationship with Frederick Stark, may his soul rest in peace.
Yes.
That was special.
That's it.
You know, we started something really special, and everything kind of grew out of all of that. You know, I did backstage and was able to do Josie H. Got to do features like How to Steal 2 Million and others. But the thing is, you know, it's the team. You know,
yes.
It's the team. It's like, I mean, I've got a great wardrobe department. Our writing department is fantastic, and great professionals, you know, inside the organization, you know, that's it actually. And then the crew, you know, we're running a happy organization there, you know.
Yeah, I think for me, the focus really was the fact that I suppose at the core, and that's obviously the producers people that are there really from beginning to end, the producers and people that are very close to you, if that chemistry doesn't work, you know, the whole thing falls apart.
I
think that's probably where the formula lies with you guys.
Getting people to work together, that's Hendeford says, you know, working together, that's success.
Yeah. And for as long as you have.
Indeed.
So his loss, what did it mean to you, Frederick Stark?
No, it was, you know, it was, you know,
I
mean, we're not here forever, it saddened me, you know, that, somebody who died at that relatively young age and a talented person who still had a major contribution to make to our sector, TV sector. You know, yeah, it saddened me a lot. And but, you know, he laid good foundation. I'm working with his son, who's very talented as well. So it's cool.
I'm assuming that what happens when something like that happens, it also makes you think a little bit about your own mortality.
And, yes. I mean, I've got friends who, I've got a friend of mine who just died, Willow Khosisile, you know, and, you know, and it makes you think, you know, about it, you know, it makes you think about, hey, I've got to get my affairs in order. You know, I'm working on a drama series right now, you know, I'm writing a drama series right now, and my main preoccupation is to stay
alive,
as healthy as I can, you know, because
to see it to the end.
I think I've got about one or two or five maybe things I have to do before I leave the room. You know what I mean? But I'm not ready to leave the room yet, and I try and make sure that I stay healthy, and I go to gym and stuff. I play golf, and you know, like what do they say? I'm 70 now, and some people say that you're in the departure lounge. I guess you could say I'm in the departure lounge, but
you're hanging on for dear life.
I'm hanging on for dear life.
So you know, with that in mind, what would your legacy? What would you like it to be? I mean, do you think about that?
Think about what?
Your legacy. What would you like it to be?
No, I don't think about such things.
You refuse.
No, I don't. That's self-importance, and I don't think about those things.
Listen, you've been such a pleasure to have here with us.
Yeah,
we really appreciate it.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, no matter who says what, you're a pioneer, and thank you very much for shining a light on the work that you do, for giving so many people an opportunity. And I think one day people will remember just how much you contributed. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Pamela.
That's Mfundo Bundla, everybody.